Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to our Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, different cultures, or the Bible. Today, my visitor is Brother Kieran Finn. Brother Kieran, a warm welcome and hi there by the radio program. Right.
Hello and welcome again.
Right. Thank you for coming back to the studio. And Brother Kieran Finn is a Champagnat brother and Bible scholar. He's originally from Gisborne and has spent many years in adult education, teaching scripture in New Zealand and abroad. Brother Kieran, we have now entered the season of Lent. It is traditionally a time of fasting for 40 days, which is often referred to Mark 1:12-15, when Jesus was in the desert and was tempted by Satan. Is this how we can imagine the start into Lent?
Well, I think it's good to sort of have that as the start, but all of that is moving towards the finish. And the finish, of course, is the Passion, the death and the resurrection of Jesus. Because what kind of Messiah is he going to be is the essence of the temptation. And you can see it so clearly in the Gospel of Luke, the last line of the temptations is that the Satan left him until there was an opportune time. And that opportune time comes at the start of the Passion with, "Then the Satan entered into Judas." You can see the link immediately. Where is this all taking us to? That's taking us into the Passion narratives of Holy Week, especially Luke for this year and John, as always, on Good Friday. And the Church is asking us to focus on those two Passion narratives, and to be able to say on Good Friday, that's a different story from the one we heard on Sunday. Luke's Passion account, it's the gentleness of Jesus, the forgiveness of Jesus. It's one of the most beautiful Passion narratives, because it's where Jesus prays, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And he dies with that beautiful evening prayer of the Jewish people from Psalm 35, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Whereas John's Passion narrative is a victory journey. And Jesus dies with those beautiful words on his lips: "It is accomplished." And also, of course, in that, somebody once wisely said that everybody in the Passion narrative of John is on trial, except for Jesus.
But Lent is really a time of preparation for this very special time of the Passion.
Oh, yes. So let's just go deeper into those two and begin with the Last Supper.
Yes. And for those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. And if you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or visit our website or Facebook page at Te Ngako Waiora, Mercy Spirituality Center. So, Brother Kieran, tell us more.
Right. Well, the preparation for the Passover, in Luke's Gospel, Peter and John come to Jesus. "Where are we to go that we may eat the Passover?" Wow, this is different from Mark, where may we go that you, singular, may eat the Passover. And in Mark's Gospel, Jesus eats the Passover on his own. The Eucharistic texts right across the Gospels have got such a different perspective. And in this Gospel, Peter and John, the oldest and the youngest, are there, and they go. In at the supper itself, that tragic line that when Jesus announces the betrayer, he says, "The hand of the one who will betray me is with me on the table." And in Koine Greek, the trapeza, the table is the table of the Eucharist down through the ages. And in our present church, the pain of the betrayal by the hands of those at the hands of those whose hand is on the table is a shocking lesson and reminder of what that even gentle, ever gentle Gospel of Luke is talking about.
So even though that, so it applies to today's age. So the Bible is always up to date in a way because people have not changed.
Well, it's always speaking to us in our own time as well. And you have also in this Gospel that line when Jesus says to his disciples, I have longed to eat this meal with you before I suffer. You won't get that line in Mark because it's such, it's Jesus eats the supper alone, surrounded by misunderstanding in Mark, but that longing. And the other fascinating thing is in Luke's Last Supper is there are two cups, not one, as you get in the other Gospels, where a sort of, the meal is turned into a sort of a rite, a word over the bread, a word over the cup. But in Luke's Gospel, we're back to a meal. The Passover always did have several cups, but we've got back that meal setting, and that second cup is poured out for you. And then, but Luke, even though it's gentle, this is where, before the at the supper, Jesus speaks a symposium, the last will and testament of the dying founder of the church, where you have the dispute about greatness rising among the disciples, and Jesus says, this shall not be so among you. So, again, it speaks to the church today, where who are the greatest? The least. Now, going to John's Gospel, though, for the supper, there's no Eucharistic text in John when you get into the Last Supper. Back in chapter 6, we've got a whole chapter in John on the Eucharist itself. But what John does have, of course, is that magnificent scene of Jesus washing the feet. And the message is clear that in the Eucharist, we receive the one who gave himself for us, that we may give ourselves for others. So the washing of the feet shows the very meaning of the Eucharist.
Is that only in one Gospel, the washing of the
feet? One Gospel, John. And, of course, the betrayal is mentioned in John's Gospel. The betrayal will be by the one by whom I will give this morsel to him. So Jesus dips the morsel in the dish. And that piece, go out and do what you have to do. And it finishes with that, it was night. It was dark. Light and darkness thread their way through the Gospel of John so strongly. And instead of the sort of brief action that we get in the Last Supper and the other Gospels, in John's Gospel we get all those chapters from 14 to 17, the vine and the branches, and then, of course, the great priestly prayer of Jesus. So different version of the supper. So then moving then, the story moves into the agony in the garden. And in the Luke in agony, I often think in Luke, it's a good news, bad news story. Peter, what do you want first, the good news or the bad news? And the bad news is you're going to betray me. The good news is, Peter, I have prayed for you that you will be strengthened and will come and strengthen your brethren.
That is also motivating, because if Jesus knows already that Peter is going to betray him, but he still has not given up on him.
No.
Something that gives hope to people.
Yeah. But again, you know, Luke is so kind with the failing disciples. He only comes back once, you know, to find them sleeping, because Luke's Gospel, Jesus doesn't believe in rubbing in their failures. And they've got an important job to do in Acts of the Apostles, so they always get good press. And even staggeringly, when Judas comes in to betray Jesus stops him and says, would you betray the Son of Man with a kiss? We're not told. Luke doesn't kiss Jesus in Luke. Even Judas is not allowed to carry out that final act of betrayal. And they even, poor old disciples, even get an excuse for sleeping, because in Luke they were sleeping for sorrow. So it's quite beautiful, really.
So the Judas kiss is mentioned in Luke, but it's not mentioned that
he doesn't kiss him.
Yeah. Right? And in the other Gospels?
He does, yes, too right. The final act of betrayal is there. And then they don't flee. You know how in the other disciples they all forsook him and fled? No, not in Luke. There's no fleeing on their part. So they are all at the cross. All his acquaintances are gathered at the cross. So
the other day we were talking about contraries and contradictions in the Bible.
Lovely.
And now you have these different, you have the same scene in different Gospels.
Yes, yes. And expressive of the theology of the individual Gospel. Well, it's
easy. Can you just remind us, because Matthew was for the Jewish people, was written for the Jewish people. For whom did Luke write?
Now, he's writing for the Gentiles, and that's an interesting question for the simple reason that you have the Roman world, and you have a Roman judge. Now, the Roman judge is fascinating because he keeps saying, I find this man to be innocent. And then, of course, he's a Galilean, so I'll shove the problem off to Herod. And it's only in Luke that Herod actually appears, and Herod, who wanted to see him so much, is quite disappointed. He hands him over to his soldiers. And it's in Luke that it's Herod's soldiers that end up mocking Jesus. And the other thing about this Roman world and environment, in the Gospels, when Jesus dies and you have that affirmation of faith, truly this was the Son of God, take a look at Luke. Because the centurion says, this man was innocent. And now what's going on? The innocence of Jesus has got to be expressed in the Roman world because of the Roman trial and the Roman judge. And the affirmation of innocence is there, right through, and strongly stressed. So again, we have that fascinating difference. Well, what about the agony in the garden in John? Well, the interesting thing is, there's a garden but no agony, right? In the other Gospels, there's actually an agony and no garden mentioned. So with true Catholic inclusiveness, we have the agony in the garden as the first sorrowful mystery.
That means that it's like a merging of all Gospels.
Yes, exactly, right. But
it's possible that it happened like that and just one person remembered this and the other one remembered that.
But see, all of the Gospels are based on the memories and the eyewitnesses' account that come down through 40, 50, 60 years of telling stories, the oral tradition.
It's like if you have somebody who goes on holiday and together with another person, and one talks about the beach and the other one about the restaurant, and it might be a restaurant at the beach.
But then, and 50 years later, when they get together to reminisce on that journey, well, there'd be some very interesting differences and slants and so on. But now, when we come to John's Gospel, the soldiers arrive, and those soldiers come from the Jewish and from the Roman establishments. Who are you seeking, says Jesus? Jesus of Nazareth. I am he. And they fall to the ground, right? So not quite the versions we're getting in the other ones. And then, with royal imperiousness, he tells the soldiers, let these ones go. Because after all, Jesus didn't make any mistakes in choosing those 12. And then, of course, we have the fascinating story of who the dickens wielded the sword to cut off the ear. Because in Mark, it could have been one of the crowd. In Matthew, it's one of the disciples. And we get Luke is sort of in the same sort of, you know...
tradition.
Well, by the time you get to John, it's Peter, because that's the sort of thing that impetuous Peter would do. And we get the details of Malchus, and we also find out it's the right ear. And if he's a servant of the high priest, he's no longer physically perfect and cannot carry out duties any longer. So all of this interesting stuff emerges. And then to go a bit there, we move on to the trial. And in the trial in Luke, for goodness sake, people see these paintings of Peter denies Jesus, and Jesus, there's a trial going on upstairs, and Jesus standing out on a balcony so that the words of the gospel can be fulfilled, that Peter saw Jesus, Jesus looks into Peter's eyes, and Peter goes out and weeps bitterly. The only trouble with the artists is they haven't read the gospel, because in the gospel of Luke, there is no night trial. It happens in the early morning of the following day. So, therefore, when Peter denies Jesus, Jesus is standing by the fire, hearing his number one disciple lying his head off about not knowing. And one of the lovely things is the way that sometimes these parallel each other. Jesus is asked, are you the Messiah, the Son of God? And he says, I am. And the next breath, like in the Mark and sandwich structure, you've got Peter saying, I am not. Right.
But so, just in defense of the artists, I believe that many of the early artists certainly did not read the Bible because they were not necessarily literate. And then you have to think of where did they get the information from, and you'd get only part of it. And that's like with the five blind men and the elephant.
Well, yes, but again, you're finding wonderful examples. Like in John's Gospel, you don't find... carrying of the cross being helped. In John's Gospel, Jesus carries that cross himself, right? There's no assistant needed at all. He does it all on his own. And then, of course, even with that trial, Jesus appears before Annas rather than Caiaphas to start the narrative. We have the denial by Peter. Then we have the high point of the passion narrative of the trial of John's Gospel are the seven scenes with Pilate. There are seven little snippets, and that's the biggest feature of the passion narrative in the Gospel of John. And the wonderful thing at the end is a striking scene where Pilate brings Jesus out and sits him, or takes the mercy seat, the seat of judgment, the Gabbatha, the judgment seat. Now, who sits on the judgment seat? Is it Pilate or is it Jesus? And it seems as though it's Jesus. And so the judge is judged by Jesus sitting on the judgment seat. So, there's that tragic line. I know that how in Matthew you have that terrible line that... it was a horrendous line in Matthew where that will slip my mind, but the equivalent in John, we have no king but Caesar. That's the ultimate denial of the authority. Oh yes, the Matthew line was, his blood be upon us and upon our children. Terrible line, tragic line. So the denial of God as their king is a dreadful finish to the trial in the Gospel of John. And then we come to the final, the crucifixion itself. And I think the great thing about the Gospels are they don't dwell on gory details. Simon of Cyrene appears, yes, in Luke, but so do the weeping women of Jerusalem. That's a beautiful and tender scene that only Luke has. Then we have the line from the cross, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And, of course, this is the gospel that is full of great forgiveness. Peter, forgiven for his denial, weeping. And then you have the great story of the prodigal son. And then It's only in Luke's gospel that you find the good thief on the cross. Today, you'll be with me in paradise. Today, the moment of salvation for all of us. And then the title written above the cross. Do you know each gospel has a different wording?
Oh.
It's very interesting. And like the last words of Jesus differ in three gospels.
It's finished. It's accomplished.
It is accomplished. Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. My God, why have you forsaken me? And then, of course, the emphatic in Luke is, this is the King of the Jews. And then the beautiful last prayer, and then this man was innocent. So, but when you come to the crucifixion in the Gospel of John, that's so striking, because it's only there that the mother and the beloved disciple appear. And then you have the side of Jesus pierced with a spear, blood and water flowing out, and that's birth, the blood and water scene. And, of course, Jesus breathes his last. He hands over his spirit to the little community of the men, of the man and the woman at the foot of the cross.
The ones who trusted him.
Our representatives for the future of the church. The birth imagery is so powerful. And then, of course, the body is taken down from the cross, and Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus, they have 100 pounds of myrrh and aloes to put in the tomb. I don't know how they fitted the body in with all of that, because this is actually the burial of a king. So you can see again the sort of the richness of the death of Jesus, the recognition of his messianic and kingly dignity.
And that was Luke.
That's John. That's John's gospel. Because Luke's crucifixion, of course, finishes with, truly this man was innocent. It finishes with those beautiful, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And then, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. Whereas John's gospel finishes with this, those wonderful words that he speaks where it is accomplished, the completion of his life. And, of course, that's where, you know, you began with Lent, you began with fasting, but the end of fasting is the richness that comes with the resurrection and Holy Week. And John's passion narrative is what makes Good Friday good, this wonderful message of salvation, where the whole meaning of the life of Jesus comes to its completion. And where in the other Gospels, where the type of Messiah is, the type of Messiah is going to be. So I actually quite love those temptation stories, because the two in Matthew and Luke, of course, Mark's story is very brief. Jesus is the new Adam with the animals.
Yeah.
There. But with Matthew, you have, of course, stones turned into bread, and really the Word of God is bread for us when we really get into the Scriptures. And then the second for Matthew is where Jesus is taken to the temple. And then the third, of course, he's taken to the mountaintop. Matthew's gospel is all about mountains. Here's another one, Mount Calvary. But it's Moses, the mountain Sinai, and Jesus, the new teacher, the Sermon on the Mount. Now, when we come to Luke, following through on that same temptation story, we begin with stones into bread, and then we get the middle story is the mountain. Oh, why? Well, that means the third story is the temple. Well, Luke's gospel began in the temple with Zechariah, and it's going to finish in the temple where they come back from the mountain after Jesus ascends, and they are all day at prayer in the temple. So
have the temple in the beginning and the temple in the end.
Yes.
So
yes.
You know how it is embraced.
Right. Yes. Yes. So we've got those two gospels spanning Holy Week. And it's so important to be able to identify what happens in one gospel. To hear that, because this is the height, this is where all the gospels are leading to with the life of Jesus.
But isn't that confusing for people when they hear the gospel of Luke and then John for the feast days, and so they don't get the whole thread, but it's part here and part there? Or is that what you mean with the merging, where you have...
No, we don't merge.
Oh, no.
See, this has been the problem for so long, where, you know, if you've got Mark 1 year and Matthew another year, the sermon you've got for one gospel is not going to work for the following year. We need to know the gospels. And we come back to that line of Jerome, ignorance of the scriptures is ignorance of Christ. Or my favorite, and I say it all the time, from Irenaeus, the presence of the Lord in his word is as real as his presence in the Eucharist. So what would happen if at the end of each Mass we asked ourselves, did the living Lord step out of the word as effectively as the living Lord stepped out of the Eucharist? That's the responsibility of good readers. We had that wonderful day at Onehunga on the liturgy of the word. It was superb.
And that was organized by the liturgy department of the diocese.
Oh, well, bless them for it. Take it to other places, because we need to focus more and more on the scriptures. Because, you know, I see so much of the scriptures speaking to our day. I mean, the Lucan words where that symposium piece about don't lord it over others, not using great titles and so on. Ever new, ever relevant.
Well, let's work on it. I think that as the Bible, the words were not accessible for many Catholics for such a long time.
Yes.
So I think that it might take a little bit, but we'll have to work on it.
Yes, I think we need to have a few years of scripture study. And I would say, quite seriously, where are the scripture scholars in this country now?
Well, we'll see what we have. One Bible scholar here on the table. We have Brother Kieran Finn, and he is sharing with us his knowledge, which is wonderful. Thank you very much, Brother Kieran. And just quickly, what's coming up in our Mercy Spirituality Center? We'll have a Lenten series 2019. We'll start with the 8th of March, 8th and the 15th of March. We will have Songs for the Spirit, Songs of Tezi with Max Maxwell. On the 22nd of March, Sister Anne Warren will give an introduction into the life of Brother Roger of Tezi, or Roger of Tezi.
Right.
And on the 29th of March, Sister Catherine Wiles Pickard will give a reflection on the Stations of the Cross in our chapel at the Mercy Spirituality Center. These Stations of the Cross are made by the woodcarver Jiris Jackerman, who used the Pohutukawa wood from one of our trees from the Mercy Spirituality Center. For all events at our center, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238 or through our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. And I wish you all a good Friday and a good week ahead. And thank you very much, Brother Kieran.
Thank you.